Well, a special meeting of the Analaska City Council is called to order at 6 p.m. on Monday, April 8th, 2024. I'll call on Councilman Nicholson to read the mission statement.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you very much. City Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman? Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Longo? Mr. Tungo?
Here.
Mr. Turiakov?
Here. We do have a quorum. Councilman Longo and Councilman Coleman are excused. Please join us with Councilman Luby to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda?
I'll make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. If there's no objection, the agenda is adopted. Our next item is awards and presentations. On our agenda is the awards and presentation for the fire department personnel. I'd like to call Fire Chief Ben Knowles to do the presentation, please.
Good evening, Mayor Turiakov, City Council members, and esteemed members of the community. I stand before you today with immense pride and gratitude as we acknowledge a significant milestone in the history of the Onalaska Fire Department. Just recently, seven individuals from our community have successfully completed the rigorous training to become State of Alaska Certified Firefighter 2s. This accomplishment marks a pivotal moment for our department, as it signifies not only dedication and commitment of these individuals, but also a significant step forward in our department's capabilities. I'd like to recognize the tremendous amount of time and effort the firefighters have invested in their training. Over the past months, these individuals have devoted themselves to rigorous training, completing more than 380 hours of intensive coursework and practical exercises. They've spent countless hours away from their families, diligently studying didactic materials and honing their skills through rigorous practice. Based on our internal research of department records, with the help of the State of Alaska, I am proud to announce that this class represents the first ever Firefighter 2 class administered locally by staff. Your Onalaska Fire Department strives to consistently provide a high level of care to the community. With the completion of this academy, over 70% of department members now hold an advanced level firefighter and EMT certification. Firefighter 2 certification represents proficiency in a wide range of firefighting techniques, including advanced rescue operations, hazardous materials response, and leadership in emergency services. This achievement is a testament to their hard work, perseverance, and the exceptional standard of training they have received. I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge and extend heartfelt gratitude to the families of these firefighters. Your unwavering support, understanding, and sacrifice have been instrumental in enabling your loved ones to pursue their calling and excel in their training. We recognize and appreciate the sacrifices you have made, and we share in your pride and joy as we celebrate this achievement together. I would also like to express my gratitude to the City of Onalaska Administration and the City Council for their support of our department's mission to increase certification levels. Your support enables us to provide the highest level of service to our community, and we are grateful for your ongoing commitment to our department's growth and development. Without further ado, please join me in celebrating the accomplishments of these seven firefighters and recognize the significant milestone they have achieved, and wish them well for a safe and successful career as Onalaska firefighters.
I'd like to say congratulations to those that move forward in their career. Appreciate all that you do for this community. Thank you. Okay, next item is the community input and announcements. At this time, members of the public can provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, state your name, and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Mayor and council, thank you. My name is Thomas Rupos. I'm one of the firefighters and the president of the Firefighters Association local chapter. We're getting ready to try and bring back the Firefighters Ball, but we need everybody's help. So we've got some posters with QR codes that we're putting out around town. If you could please fill out a survey for us, it's only 8 questions. It's pretty quick. We just kind of want to get a feel for what kind of event the community wants, and we want to be able to make the most of everybody's night out. So please help us out. Our survey is going to end on April 30th. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm just wanting to announce that IFHS is going to put on the mental health first aid training this Saturday for anybody that would like to come. It's free to the community. For anybody working with anybody, it's not to make you a clinician or a therapist, but given kind of the challenges of behavioral health in this community, it's is what it is. Mental health first aid helps us all kind of recognize things early and hopefully help people get into some sort of treatment or intervention before it becomes more serious. Anyway, you can, there's a QR code, so you can log in, and that's 9 to 5 this Saturday at the museum, not the museum, the library, strike that, the library. Teresa and our staff will be doing that this weekend and periodically over the coming months. That's all I had.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Lynn Crane USAFE. I just wanted to express our gratitude to the community for a very successful SUPOF fundraiser that we held on March 30th. It was a record year for us. We raised over $28,000. We had 26 delicious soups entered, and I'm sorry none of you were able to attend, but maybe we'll see you there next year. Anyway, thanks to the community for your support.
Okay, thank you. 28,000. That's very good. Anyone else in chambers for announcements? Anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir. No one raised their hand or made an indication they wanted to speak.
Okay, thank you. This time, next is a public comment on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. They don't want to wait until items comes up for the regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium if you have any items of public comment on agenda items. City clerk, is anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Thank you. Next item 8 is the work session. May I have a motion and a second to go into work session?
I make a motion to go into the work session.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson and seconded by Councilman Tungle. Without objection, hearing no objection, we will be into work session at 6:09 p.m. We have asked each applicant to limit. Next item is community support grant applicants' presentations. We've asked each applicant to limit their presentation to 5 minutes, not including questions from the city council. I'll turn this over to the deputy city manager to introduce.
Hi, good evening, Mayor and Council. So I don't think this requires any more introduction from me. So I think, Mary, you can just go ahead and start calling them up.
Okay, thank you. I'll call up each applicant to the podium after presentation, ask the council if they have any questions. And first up is the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, APIA, Stacy Kelly, Behavioral Health Director.
Okay, is that better? Greetings, Mayor, City Council members, and community members. My name is Stacy Kelly. I'm the Director of Behavioral Health for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association. I've been to Unalaska several times, but it's always a treat to be here, so thank you. We have submitted our grant to cover salary for a behavioral health clinician. Our behavioral health services have two office locations here in Unalaska, the Unalaska Clinic and the Bjorka Building. We also have a behavioral health clinic in Anchorage as well. We are the only state certified organization for comprehensive behavioral health services serving Unalaska. We offer individual, group, children, family, adult services. We also provide crisis services and psychiatric clinic through our contracted provider, Rachel Langerman, through telehealth. We provide psychological testing and outpatient SUD, intensive outpatient program 2.1 services in person and through telehealth in collaboration with Eastern Aleutian tribes. We also provide ADIS classes and serve all Alaskans regardless of Indian beneficiary status in Unalaska. We receive referrals from primary care, self-referral, and other agencies. And for our crisis services, we do contract with the Avail Crisis Line for 24-hour on-call services. We also have a crisis phone that our providers here in Unalaska manage. And we do offer a daily ready access service so folks can get in at a moment's notice daily. So a little bit about the grant award that we've applied for. This is very little change from years past. This funding provides resources for our clinician here in Unalaska, as well as some support for the general supplies and you know, a little bit for food for the C4C meetings that happen in the community. We offer, you know, matching funds from the state of Alaska that we receive, federal funds, and other generated revenue covers our overhead administrative costs, our facilities, and our registration scheduling and all of that stuff that happens behind the scenes. So that most of this funds go through provide direct services for community members. I haven't presented in person for a long time, so sorry if my voice is a little shaky, but I am open for questions if you have any.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from the council? Anyone? Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I'm sorry, just a quick question. It may be answered somewhere in there. Is just the operating hours?
The clinic hours are from 8 until 5 daily. We have clinicians bouncing between the Bjorka building and the health clinic primary care building.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for APIA, Councilman Tungo?
Is that 5 days a week?
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your information, and we'll consider that in our next round.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next, we've got Iloilik Family Health Services, Noel Reed.
I'm back. Thank you for letting me come speak to you tonight. I don't have a ton to add. We've already had this conversation a few times. I would like to point out that our CT trailer is there now and the engineer's working on it. It ran today. We're doing some further testing on it tomorrow, but I'm hoping that we can send images and get them back by the end of the week that we'd be operational. So should we need that, that we'd be ready to go. Still training staff, but we have some locum providers here that be able to train our folks, but also be on call for CT going forward. So that's good news to have that here. It's probably the most remote CT that I think we could, that at least people were involved with, they've never seen one out this far away from civilization before, quote. I think that I would just kind of further that we're working on trying to be better at what we do. So we're not back here year after year and asking for money, but this really is just to help the deficit for running an ER. I don't know of any hospitals, much less clinics, that actually make money on an ER. So, somehow they've been able to stay open and working on reserves, but this is kind of the end of the line for us in the ER. I hope you guys will fund it as we've asked, and certainly open to any questions that you haven't asked before. Haven't been up here.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions or comments for Noel? Do take advantage of the grants that are out there. No city has been a great supporter of the clinic, will continue to be, but I think maybe looking out and getting more grants. How are you doing with that?
Well, as you know, we have a $20 million grant to build a new facility. We have another grant to build some housing. So we're active on grants, but there's not really a grant that says, hey, do you lose money on the ER? Apply here and this will help offset that loss, right? So we do have our HRSA Community Health Center grant that helps us. That's primarily on the outpatient basis. You're not really supposed to use it for hospital-like services. We flex those grants as best we can. And we're always looking for other grants. So if you do hear of something where there's a, subsidy for an ER in Frontier, we'll definitely go for it. But it's, you know, we can chase some of the grants, but they don't always apply to what we're trying to do here. But we've done a lot better grants over the last 2 years than we have been, I think, a long, long, long time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments? Okay, thank you, Knowles. Next up, we have the Museum of the Aleutians, Dr. Virginia Hatfield, Executive Director.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council members. I'm privileged to stand here representing the Museum of the Aleutians on behalf of the dedicated Board of Directors and staff of the museum. The Museum of the Aleutians collects, preserves, and shares the rich cultural legacy of the Aleutian Islands region. We are steadfast in our commitment to serve diverse audiences, local, intergenerational, and international, by providing the permanent exhibits that showcase over 10,000 years of history, the changing exhibits that feature a variety of subjects. Currently, we have a genealogy project that is in there talking about the Commander Islands. And we also have a variety of educational programs and research opportunities. Each year, we host a dozen visitors who are seeking to study the collections, the items that we hold and are stewards of. We collaborate with universities and Indigenous scholars and help them get the information they need and look at the objects they need to look at to do their studies. We are the stewards of over 600,000 archaeological, ethnographic, photographic, World War II, and art objects. Each year, we add hundreds of new items to our professionally maintained collections. In 2024 already, we have accessioned or cataloged 85 different items. That includes some new artwork by Carolyn Reed from the 1980s that someone donated, some librettes and other artifacts, some maps and notes and some purses and some clothing, a variety of items, very interesting items that have come in. In 2023, we received back some collections from archaeological sites, 80 boxes of artifacts from the Reese Bay site, which is Wislow, I believe we call it, or McLeese Lake, it's another name for it. We hold on behalf of the Unalashka Corporation. We received some collections from the Islands of Four Mountains that are the Aleut Corporations who own those. We also have U.S. Fish and Wildlife collections from Attu, Shemya, and other islands. all of these collections, we have to rehouse into acid-free boxes or bags and then get them stored into our collections. It takes a lot of work. We also engage our community and both in the museum and beyond our walls through a wide range of educational programs, including family activity days like the one we had yesterday, Hatching in the Aleutians, as well as lectures that we have visiting researchers come speak, as well as our lunch and learn program that is tapping into the talent that's on this island. We routinely collaborate on programs with the Unalashka Corporation, the Kawalinga Tribe, and other Aleutian Native corporations and tribes, as well as the Unalashka School District. We bring archaeology programs both to the Kawalinga Tribe and work on archaeological sites on behalf of the Unalashka Corporation. And as a cornerstone of Unalashka's tourism industry, we welcome thousands of visitors each year, coordinating closely with the Unalashka Visitors Bureau to ensure a memorable experience for cruise ship passengers and other guests. And by the way, we receive a lot of really great compliments about both the museum and this town. People are really quite awed by our city. We offer visitors and locals alike a variety of tours that are educational. We have collections tours, gallery tours, but also hiking tours and walking city walk tours and driving tours. We're proud of our contributions to the community, but we recognize the need to secure sustainable funding for the future. The museum's board of directors and staff are diligently working to diversify our funding streams. We're aiming for financial self-sufficiency. It is a top goal in our strategic plan. However, at present, we still rely on the community support grant to cover a portion of our operational costs. Other grants cannot assist us in the same manner as the community support grant, as they typically fund additional projects like new work. So we are quite grateful for the community support grant. It's a precious resource for us because it does provide the funding we need for our day-to-day operations, most of our collections and administrative work comes out of the community support grant. And without this community support grant, we would not be able to bring the diversity of programs that we have to our community. Thank you for your attention and your ongoing support of the museum.
Thank you. Do you have any questions from council members or Director Hatfield? I guess I have probably the same thing. Do you have a grant writing person available, and how's your success rate been?
We're pretty small staff, so we have 3 full-time and a couple of part-time dedicated staff and then a handful of other part-time workers helping here and there. We're pretty successful with the grant process. I think we've applied for 5 in the last 6 months and just got word on 4 that were successful. These include 3-year grants to work on the Reese Bay collection that I just mentioned. That'll bring in a researcher, that'll bring in a collections assistant to help us get everything rebagged and rehoused. So I'd say we're pretty successful with our grant applications, but again, it's not enough to keep us open, but we do try. I would like to point out though that where we can grow and what we can do, the museum can do to get us kind of backing away from the city is with our earned revenue. With our cruise ships coming in, we'll make in a day what we make in a typical non-tourism month, like in February. We made $6,900 in September, one day cruise ship, whereas in February of this month, we made, I think, $3,900. So that's where we're really trying to push it. And we're also trying to do things like we closed for winter hours this past season, and that allows us to stretch our money a lot farther for the rest of the year. So we're working on it.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate all the work you're doing for the Nungan people, and their history is important, and teaching it in school is important also in our support program. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Next up, we have Kawalingan Tribe of Unalashka and Fritz Petutikoff, Cultural Resource Manager and Camp Kungayu Director.
The button. Angokina and Fritz Petutikoff, Asakta Cook, culture director for the Colony and Tribe of Onalaska. Colony and Tribe of Onalaska, federal recognized tribe nation, vows to exercise its powers and further the economic and social well-being of its members, and in so doing will safeguard and support the Onongan language, culture, customs, and traditions for generations to come. With our proposal this year, we did reduce the amount that was that we're requesting. I'm sorry, but that's not the right number. The amount? Okay. What is it? Oh, less than. Yeah. So we did reduce the amount that we are requesting, and it is our plan to continue to reduce the amount we request from the City of Onalaska. In doing that, we are continuing to apply for funding from other sources throughout Alaska and throughout the nation, specifically under Department of Justice. Those are like tribal vocational, tribal victim services set aside grant, and that those kind of grants help us support the cultural aspect as well as the traditional healing of those kinds of funds. And so being able to provide Camp Kanayu once a year, we've been continuing to extend our cultural activities throughout the year on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, and also supporting our language program. This year, with the funding that we used previously, we've been able to start our weekly Onongan Tanu classes. And those are held once a week, and continuing to grow our regular people on a regular basis. We've also included in this to make sure that we reduce the time that we have with some of our employees, so that we're able to make sure that we're on point with the actual funds that we actually need. And then also taking our funds and actually spreading it out through the different grant sources that we have, because with Camp Kanayu, it was really hard to do our report this year, and that because we have anywhere from 10 to 15 different kind of grant sources, it's hard to put it all together in the format that you guys have requesting them in. But thankfully, working with your people here, we're able to get that done correctly and able to get the numbers in there right. This next year, we're planning on having Camp Kanayu again this year with a minimum of 50 kids from our community and the region. We also bring in a lot of our mentors from out of the community, and that's where a lot of the resources go, is to being able to bring those really much needed mentors so that they continue to be able to bring those classes to the community and continue to mentor some of these students that are going to be the next mentors in the future. That also includes supporting our youth. So we have a couple of interns over the summer, and we get other funding to support that as well. Support for our weekly programming, we continue to do that. We continue to do traditional healing outreach and educating our people in the community. I don't think I have anything else.
Okay, thank you. Have any questions or comments? Mr. Bell?
Yeah, you did fine presentation there. I do have a quick question, and you may or may not be able to answer it, but does the tribe receive funds for other cultural programs that would potentially go towards this as a cultural program?
Yeah, so we have, as I mentioned, maybe 10 to 15 different grants. And then we take those grants specifically for Let's see. So just this last year, we did a tanning workshop. We did the Anangam Tanu workshop. Right now, we're in the middle of a Ikea build and a Nigla build. Those funds don't all come from the city. They come from other grants that we are going after on a regular basis. So I'm not the only person that writes these grants. We also have a grant writer and our COO who also directs us towards other grants that are available for us that we should be going after.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any further questions? I got a list of them, but no, I'm kidding. Thank you very much.
So that's good.
Okay, next up is Unalaska Community Broadcasting. Lauren Adams, General Manager.
Okay, I run KUCB, which started as a television station in, I've learned because we're celebrating, it was going to be our 40th anniversary coming up in 2024. But now it's going to be our 50th. So what I've learned is that our first signals went live 1974 through the school district. It's still the same channel though, and then the radio went live in 1976. That's according to my record. So if anybody who's been around longer than that, I'm looking for more information. So yes, we are celebrating an anniversary this year. We've always been broadcasters. In recent years, we've diversified the way that we provide news and information to Unalaska. We do a lot online now and a lot on social media. I think we have a pretty diverse funding stream. We've worked really hard on that. One challenge that we have, similar to what Virginia was saying about the museum, that operational funds are really challenging. We have gotten a couple grants to fund reporter salaries, and that's made a big difference in our staffing levels. And the state funding was a huge hit for us. Under our current governor, our funding has been vetoed every year. It's made it through the House and Senate and then been vetoed at that final stage. So thanks to Bryce Edgman, there is money in the budget right now. He's worked really hard to advocate for that, and we certainly all owe him a thank you. But we don't have super high hopes that that funding will make it all the way through the session. So if at some point we get state funding back, that's going to be a big step for us. We get federal funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Those numbers have gone up a little bit, and so that's helped. I have very good news on the operational front. It was in the grant application, but we received $211,000 for upgrades at the station through the FEMA Next Generation Warning System. So that should be coming in soon, and we're going to have power backup at the station and better connectivity here to City Hall, if that's something that the council would like to have videotape, be back on TV, things like that we can do with that grant. It's limited in what we can do, but we have some projects that I just mentioned that we're aiming for. And I'm just working really hard to get our archives. The last 2,000 tapes that are analog in the attic are going out as soon as I have logged them all. I was up there today, and I successfully got through the entire city council history section. So tons of candidates forums from 1988 through 2005 were on analog tapes, and those are going out. Election results, things like that. So that's what we're working on. That's my focus right now. And in addition to that, I am happy to answer questions. But this grant is operational. Not much has changed since last year as far as our operations, except for the special projects that I just mentioned.
Okay, thank you. Council members have questions or comments for Lauren? The $200,000 on the, so you mentioned, was that for upgrades to the system or new equipment to be
put in another location? A large chunk of it is putting a power backup at the Burma Road Chapel, so that if they're right now, we have had a few power outages in the last year, and every time that happens, we're off the air. If that ever happened in an emergency situation, we're you count on us to tell people what's going on, we wouldn't be on the air. So also having a backup place to broadcast from, so we could broadcast from here, or we could broadcast from public safety or from the top of Haystack. That's primarily the main portion of that grant.
Okay, good. Similar to a hospital, information and communication for a community this size is needed if there is a big disaster of some sort, takes out downtown or something. This building probably the only one standing.
Yeah, and what I would want to do, because the way that we work in an emergency is very much in tandem with public safety, and they, and also your community liaison officers, the people who talk to the to us, and we'd want to be as close to them as possible, but we'd be working, making that plan with the city of Unalaska.
Okay, thanks. Any further comment? Question? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Unalaska's Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, Karen Kresh, Board Chair, and Lynn Crane, Executive Director.
All right, good evening, Mayor and members of City Council. My name is Karen Kresh, and tonight I'm talking to you as the Chair of the Board of Directors of Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, or USAFE. USAFE provides safety, education, and advocacy services to empower people and create a culture of nonviolence and respect. USAFE serves those impacted by domestic and/or sexual violence, stalking, child or elder abuse, homelessness or near homelessness, food insecurity, and other life crisis. In a community with limited social services, USAFE assists people dealing with all kinds of issues and needing all kinds of advocacy and support. USAFE helps people. That is what we do, and that is all we do. We also strive to prevent interpersonal violence and suicide through outreach, education, and collaboration with our valued community partners. Unlike many other organizations, USAFE's staffing costs are impossible to predict because we never know how many shelter nights we will need to provide. It could be very few, or it could be hundreds. For example, in FY23, we provided 56 nights of safe shelter at USAFE and elsewhere. In just the first 8 months of the current fiscal year, FY24, we've already provided more than 200 nights of safe shelter. USAFE is a small program with a small staff, and like many other companies and organizations in town, we struggle not only just to fill part-time positions, but also to compete with the city and other employers who offer benefits of which we can only dream. All three of our full-time staff, including the director, rotate being on 24-hour call, and all three spend nights at the shelter when we have people in residence. This makes fundraising and outreach activities challenging, but our dedicated staff works hard to be consistent in these endeavors. As our director, Lynn Crane, mentioned earlier at tonight's meeting, we just held our first live in-person Supoff fundraiser since 2019, and we raised over $28,000, which is a record for our program. USAFE has an established history of responsibly administering the public funds granted to us by the City of Unalaska and of returning unexpended funds when we are able to do so. Indeed, in the last 25 years, USAFE has returned more than $149,000 to the city when unfilled staff positions, low shelter nights, or other circumstances have allowed us to do so. Again, I want to remind you that this happens not because we don't know how to write a budget, but because we simply have no way of accurately forecasting demand for shelter nights and other services. Our board staff and volunteers are proud of USAFE's demonstrated ability to respond to our beautifully diverse community's ever-changing needs and of our ongoing collaborative efforts to improve the health, safety, and quality of life for those living and working here. We deeply appreciate your past, current, and ongoing support of USAFE, and we would be glad to try to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments for USAFE? Do you have a comment? No? Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, next up is the Unalaska Seniors Citizens, Kelly Posomsky. Sorry about that.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council members. My name is Kelly Posomsky, and I am presenting on behalf of the Unalaska Senior Citizens. The Unalaska Senior Citizens Organization was established in 1991. Our focus lies on enhancing the well-being of the senior population within our community. We offer a range of services, including nutritional support, transportation assistance, light housekeeping, and opportunities for social interaction. These services are aimed at assisting the senior population in maintaining their quality of life. We operate a congregate lunch program, which offers a nutritious meal daily and is also an excellent opportunity for group socialization. UNIC has supported our lunch program for years, and they work with our staff to ensure that the meals meet the program requirements. We have enlisted the services of a registered dietitian to ensure that the meals that we serve adhere to the dietary guidelines for Americans. We also offer home-delivered meal services to those that are homebound and are not able to attend the congregate lunch. Currently, there are 51 seniors that utilize our lunch program over the course of a year. Our transportation services address essential needs, providing members with rides to our lunch program, vital appointments such as a dentist or doctor, and assistance with running errands. Additionally, regular scheduled trips to the grocery store, post office, and bank occur twice per week after the lunch hour. We are fortunate to have on staff a dedicated program manager who ensures that transportation assistance is also available when needed, even outside of our regular business hours. Currently, we are operating with two vehicles, a bus and a Suburban. The Suburban is utilized when we have smaller groups due to its fuel efficiency and maneuverability, while the bus accommodates larger groups. And since the bus is equipped with a lift, we use it daily to pick up meals from UNIC and transport them to the senior center for our lunch program. The lift is very helpful in facilitating the loading and unloading of food containers due to their size and weight. Our homemaker services enable us to offer light housekeeping on a weekly basis. Recently, we have seen an increase in interest in this part of the program, with a couple of additional members requesting assistance. With age-related declines in capabilities, this part of our program is an essential component to providing successful aging in place. We host weekly activity days that include anything from learning how to make an enchilada to painting sessions or Zumba workouts. Additionally, we provide transportation and cover costs to encourage the seniors to participate in special community events such as Camp Q or a new exhibit at the museum. This fiscal year, we have expanded our offerings with the acquisition of a karaoke machine, enabling us to host monthly karaoke nights. We have also added a bingo manager to our team to oversee our monthly bingo night, enhancing our range of recreational activities. We have seen a 100% increase in member participation in our group activities within the last 6 months alone. A lot of seniors live at a low or limited income level and struggle with rising housing and healthcare bills, inadequate nutrition, and a lack of access to transportation. Unalaska senior citizens have been fortunate in being able to provide programs to assist those within our community to relieve some of the burdens that can become challenging as we age. We have two staff members that run our programs on a daily basis, as well as a part-time bingo manager and homemaker. We are asking for $74,894 in funding for this upcoming fiscal year, which is a slight increase from last year. This increase is prompted by a reduction in state funding and will support our ongoing efforts to expand and enhance our program while addressing the impacts of rising prices. I would like to thank you for your time and listening to my grant presentation. And if there are any questions, please feel free to ask and I will do my best to answer.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Council members have a question, comments? Well, thank you for your presentation. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next up, the Unalaska Visitors Bureau, Catherine McGlashan, Executive Director.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I just wanted to give you a summary of last year's cruise ship season. We started off with 18 cruise ships and ended up with 20 total cruise ships and six state ferries, with an estimate of about 8,000 visitors and about $270,000 in revenues for our community. We also hosted three new social media people. Scott McMurrin spent 3 days here. He is a travel columnist with Anchorage Daily News. He also is co-owner of Alaska Travel Gram. Rhonda McBride of Alaska Public Media was here for a day. She traveled on the Tustamina to get here. We toured her around our community. This was her first visit and she was very impressed. Drifter Dave is a popular YouTuber. He visited for 3 days and did a great video of our community and our tourism venues in our community. We now have 7,200 views on YouTube of this video of Unalaska. Dave travels to remote destinations and gives viewers an opportunity to see remote destinations. He also spoke to the kids at Unalaska City School about traveling the world. He also was on KUCB's Friday radio show and talked about his visit here and his plans to visit around the world. These people have helped bring more interest to Unalaska and to come and visit us. This year, we have 23 cruise ships scheduled and five state ferries. After much consideration, our Unalaska Visitors Board of Directors decided not to continue with the high cost of bus service anymore. They made this huge step in the right direction to purchase a 15-passenger van for UVB. This is a great asset for our nonprofit. We will be able to utilize this for tours, for cruise ships, the state ferries, and any guests that arrive needing a tour. Once we finalize the purchase, we'll be revising our budget for your review. We also have been in contact with the Unalaska City School District to possibly van share. When we're not using our van, they can utilize ours and vice versa. This is a win-win for UCSD and UVB financially. UVB would like to thank Madsen for the in-kind shipping of our vehicle when this does happen. Our $8,000 increase is mainly due to purchase of more visitor guides. UVB in the past has ordered 10 to 15,000 guides. Last year, we had to order an additional $5,000 guides that cost us an extra $12,500. We currently have less than 50 boxes of guides and 23 cruise ships. We utilize about four boxes for each cruise ship, so we're going to be short this season. For 2025-2026 visitor guides, we are ordering 25,000 for the next 2 years. We would also like to thank UNICE for the in-kind shipping of these guides to our community. We're still promoting our local artists in our office. We don't charge them commission as they are promoting our beautiful island, and it brings foot traffic into our office. As of today, we have had over 300 guests into our office for information. We're gearing up for our 18th annual fundraising on April 27th at the Grand Aleutian Hotel. We're excited to host another wonderful fundraising event. We have great donors every year, and this would not be possible without those donors. On behalf of our board of directors, staff, and I, we thank you for your time and consideration, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Oh, thank you, Catherine. Any questions or comments from the council? Councilman Bell?
With the lack of buses, do you expect to see any kind of significant change in the way the tourists interact with off the cruise ships with the city? Or
That's a great question. With the board coming up with brainstorming on how to do this. We have approached Northport Rentals to rent their 3 15-passenger vans, and then we'll also have ours. So we're still in the works of trying a new program, but we're very happy to have like the money staying in our community and not overpaying. I mean, what we paid the bus service last year, we could have purchased 2 vans by now. So
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. And I'm aware of the van situation, and we're working on that with you. Any further questions? No, thank you very much.
Have a second. Thank you.
Okay. Any particular comments on any of the applicants from council? Second round? Yeah. Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I didn't have any specific questions for anybody, but I just wanted to say thank you to all of you guys. It's not always hard, or it's not always easy to get up here and speak in front of everybody. So I do appreciate it. And you guys all do really good work with all the nonprofits and serve different, you know, parts of the community. And they're all super, super important. And I really appreciate everything you guys do. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Well, I want to thank everyone that has applied. Every entity that has applied has, like Councilman Luby mentioned, has a role to play. It's an important role, whether it's a traditional transportation, health and welfare. Those are all important. And museum, history. Look forward to seeing more activity from cruise ships and you know, getting our name out there. We're a very strategic and important part of the development that's going to be happening in the next 20 years here, and we need to be ready. So thank you very much for all you do. This time I'll ask the motion to return to regular session.
I make a motion to move to regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Luby. Hearing no objection, we're back to the regular session at 6:52. Back in regular session at this time, are there directives to the city manager? In a motion, seconded, and a roll call vote. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to point out to council, City Clerk, could you put up page 2 of the memo from the grants, the chart on page 2. So just to clarify, the requests that you heard tonight, apart from the Alulik Family Health Services, their requests total $1,349,705. And the guide provided for the Community Grant Support Grant Program, the formula, provides $1,377,069. So apart from the clinic, there's plenty of money in there to, under the formula, to fully fund all of these requests. And as we heard at prior meetings, staff suggested that we fund the clinic's special request this year from the tobacco excise tax revenue that has accumulated since we have had that tax. So staff's plan at this point, unless you guys have other direction for us, would to bring back a resolution on April 23rd that would fund the grant requests at the requested amounts, plus the clinic's request for this fiscal year to cover their emergency after-hour services from the tobacco excise tax funds. From the revenue from the tobacco excise tax. And we can also, you know, there's enough in that fund to duplicate again the $78,000 that went to APIA out of those funds from the last 2 years. So that would be our plan moving forward at the April 23rd meeting, unless we get a direction from council that's not the way you want to go. So I just wanted to put that out there, that we will proceed kind of with the plan that we've laid out unless we hear from you. So you need to let us know if that's not the direction you want to go.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, question? Mayor, did you want to open this up for the for this discussion right now? Because I do have some comments on that.
I tried to get your attention while we were still on the topic, but you quickly went into the next deal.
Well, we'll be reviewing it, the requests again, and we'll go into depth probably about the clinic being set aside from the grant program.
I think what the staff is asking right now is understand the direction that council wants them to go, or want, make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah.
So okay. That when they do bring forward a resolution.
Go ahead. That's a good question.
Okay. My thought on this is that because we are going to use the tobacco tax for clinic, we've pretty much earmarked that for that, is that I didn't want to dip into that whole fund and run it to zero, or in other words, using this $78,000, leaving that in the tobacco tax, and simply funding the two revenue sources, the money out of the general fund and the bed tax. And making those the available funds that we have for this, for the fund or for the community grants this year.
I think it's a lot cleaner to get everything on the. My thoughts is to get everything on tobacco tax for the clinic, and pan everything on the regular. On our regular table that we do the nonprofit. So it'll be a couple of, in one, is it in one resolution with the two, just two separating two different amounts on it?
The plan is to have one resolution for all of the requests, including the clinic.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilman Luby.
I wasn't quite sure what Councilman Bell was saying there, so maybe you could clarify.
Yeah, the $78,000 there that we're showing in the tobacco tax, is that the balance of that fund? I'm sorry, I didn't get an opportunity to look this up.
No, that's just the same amount that we funded APIA from tobacco excise tax last year. There's no magic to that number. That's just what we did last year. Madam Clerk, if you would scroll a little bit farther to the next page, there you go. So this is the tobacco excise tax information for you. So in the first column, over to the second column titled revenue, you can see that we brought in $389,000 in 2022, $633,000 in 2023, and so far this fiscal year, $361,000 and change. I'm just rounding up, of course. And in those 2 years, 23 and 24, we spent out of the tobacco excise tax revenue. You'll see the amounts there for the IFHS and APIA in those 2 years. So right now, the cash balance in that account is the $1,139,266. That's what's available in cash right now from tobacco excise tax revenue.
So my thought is that tobacco tax money is already earmarked for next year, because we don't know how much revenue that's this tobacco tax will bring in. And it looks like it may be close to that $600,000. So if we leave that money in there and we only bring in $600,000, we still are able to fund the estimated $650,000 that was shown to us that the clinic may potentially need next year. In other words, I don't want to use any money out of this tobacco tax towards the community grants.
Gotcha.
It's in my mind, it's already earmarked for something.
And I will like to add that we don't have enough history yet with the tobacco excise tax to give you some good predictions, because it's not based on sales. It's based on when the product is brought into the community by the vendor. So, you know, they might buy once or twice a year. They might buy more often. You know, we just don't have enough experience with it to give you a really good prediction, as you can see from the numbers up there. It's just not old enough yet.
Okay, thank you. In my mind, there's enough to estimate at probably 600,000 a year on average. And it's gone from 3 to 6 within 1 year. We don't have a number yet. It's at 361. We've got a couple more months to go through yet, then we'll get to it. So I think there's plenty there. Councilman Luby.
Yeah, so if I'm understanding right, I think what you're saying, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is you want to exhaust the community grant funding that per formula first, and then the remainder would cut. If there was anything else needed for API to fund them, you would dip into the tobacco tax. It would be very little, I think, because I think there was around 27,000 left over in the community grant if we funded it the way this is. But you could take that 27,000 and apply that to APIA and reduce the amount that comes out of tobacco tax. Is that not what you're saying?
No. My opinion is that the monies that are in that tobacco tax fund are already earmarked, and that there are no additional or extra funds to use in other places.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. If you take the $1,349,705 in requests and you subtract from that the 3.5% of the revenue average, that $1,108,597, and the bed tax amount, you're going to be $50,843 short to fund all of the requests this year if you don't use any tobacco excise tax revenue.
Or the other option is to look at reducing the requests of.
Yes, that's totally within your authority.
Make it fair in order to get to the number that we have designated as 3 points or whatever that is, percentage or whatever those five items are. So we may have to do that, but we got till the 28th of this month to we actually sit down and discuss and approve a number. That's where it's going to come into effect. We start adjusting the numbers either on the requests, or we adjust it up and we get the money from general fund or tobacco tax. Councilman Luby?
Yeah, so I think there's going to be plenty of money to help the clinic next year. We don't know how much they're going to need from that tobacco tax. And that tobacco tax is to help with healthcare as well as tobacco cessation. I can never say that, right? And I feel like our nonprofits do need to be fully funded. So I don't think I would support reducing their requests when that money is there for the, you know, available to them. And I think that the prediction on what the administrator, you know, what staff has predicted out for next year, it would still be able to be covered what the request was, what they thought. So from what I saw in the packet, there would be money even left over possibly from the prediction of the estimated revenues for next year. So I don't think I would support reducing the nonprofits at this point. So,
Councilman Tuggle.
So, with a clinic request, we got a balance of what, 13,000? With the excise tax after taking up the clinic, what's the balance on the excise tax?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So looking at the chart that's up on the screen, so you see that cash balance line that says $1,139,266. So if for FY25, the requests that we're listening to right now, if we give $78,000 to fund a portion of APIA to repeat what we did last year, and we give the clinic
$1,047,441. That gives you $13,600 remaining from that cash balance. Now, we budgeted revenue of $750,000. I'm not sure we'll meet it. I don't know. But if we meet our budgeted revenue, then we would have $763,617 potential available to fund 2026 requests, the fiscal year 26. So not the present request that we're looking at for FY25, but for the next fiscal year. Yeah. And still with $35,000 left over. But that's all dependent on whether we meet the budgeted revenue of $750,000, which is questionable. We just don't know that. If we had 15 years of history with this tax and we could see that it, you know, fluctuated a little bit, we always, you know, kind of hit some average number, but we just don't yet.
I understand. I know they go by the invoices when it's being purchased. It's not what they sell.
Yes, it's what they purchase. Yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But I think we can meet. I think we're going to meet that. With the way it kind of slowed down. But we don't really get excise tax on the non-taxable cigarette that they sell. Usually they sell at the old Alaska Ship Supply. That's not being. Do we do a excise tax on that? We don't. The duty free cigarette.
Duty free for the ships is something separate, and we don't tax that.
Okay. So, I think a possibility of still meeting that. I think with the rest of the fiscal year of up to July 1st, right? I mean, end of July. So, I think we should ban everything up, but I don't think we want to bet anybody up. We need all this nonprofit. Their good support for the community that the state should be providing, but the city's been good, and I think we should continue to fund the full amount for everybody. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think we're going to have this discussion again April, whatever date. 28th?
April 23rd.
23rd. And we'll have some numbers. If you have concerns, I recommend you highly go in and sit and talk with the city clerk and Marjorie on the specific questions. I think we'll get through this. I support, you know, the grants or requests that have been made, but we set a number that we have to adjust at some point. We're going to go over every year. Some point we are going to start doing that this year, so maybe we have to look at our formula and adjust the formula, but that's something that we can do later and after June to make that happen and keep in line with inflation and cost of health insurance, which is majority of the costs almost in every entity is the health care benefits, and that's gone up dramatically in this last 2 years, and we haven't kept our formula in. When we adjusted that formula 5 years ago, we didn't have this huge increase that we're looking at, so we may have to do that in a work session to get back in line with what we feel we can support. Okay. Relations to the grants. Yeah, go ahead. Councilman Luby.
Okay, I'd like to make a directive to the city manager to fund $190,265 to the Visitors Bureau from the bed tax and $50,843 to API from the tobacco tax, and to fund the remainder of the grants through our formula of the amount of $1,108,597. If I could get a second, and then we could talk about it.
Yeah, we'll need a second because I'm trying to figure out where you're getting these numbers from that make these adjustments.
I'll second it for discussion.
Second by Councilman Tungo. Explain where you're getting these numbers.
Okay. Yeah. So the tobacco tax, the balance in that is $190,265, and I think that should go to the Visitors Bureau. And then the balance of their request can come out of our formula for the grants. The tobacco tax, if we funded everything through our formula for our grant community grant program, we'd be short $50,843. And that dollar amount, I would like to come out of the tobacco tax for APIA. And then our funding for our community grant program based on our formula would total up to be the $1,108,597.
Any comments, questions? Councilman Tungo?
So we're not sure if we're gonna get all the money, right? I mean, we're projecting that whole amount by the end of fiscal year, but I will see some number on the next meeting on what we got in there, up to date on our tobacco taxes.
Speak up or so ask the question.
Tobacco taxes are being turned in quarterly, or is it every purchase they turn in whatever the tax is to the city?
They're reported quarterly.
Okay, so we won't get the report until the end of June for the fourth quarter.
We'll get the report on January 31.
So our quarters are based on a fiscal year basis. And so that's probably what's confusing for you.
Okay, yeah. So.
So like, I think in April, we're collecting third quarter.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Or is it first
quarter? In April, we're collecting first quarter. January,
I was wrong about
February, March. So we collect the deadline to report is a month after the end of the quarter. So for fourth quarter, we collect it in January 31st.
Okay. So for the 2024, how many quarter have we collected? For 2024, we're going on to 2025 by July, right?
So for 2024, that had two quarters in. That's third quarter and fourth quarter of the calendar year 2023. So, sir, for 2024, the collection was for third quarter, which is July, August, September, which is reported October 31st. And then the fourth quarter, which covers October, November, and December, which is collected in January 31st.
They report and pay on a quarterly basis.
Yes, I'm just trying to figure out where the 2024 going to end and 2025 going to start for the quarterly that we.
So 2024 will end on, I guess,
June 30. The taxes are, when we're talking about the quarters, it's on a calendar year.
June 30 is the fourth quarter, which if we start, I mean, it might be a first quarter, second quarter. Almost.
June 30th is the end of our fiscal year.
So, you know, fiscal year is a fourth quarter.
Well, for the taxes, it's the second quarter.
Oh, okay.
Taxes are on a calendar year, the reporting
taxes
and payment.
Taxes are on a calendar year. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I kind of just want the council to think about, you know, where we're going moving forward here. I'm not necessarily opposed to funding the community grants at the full asking amount. I'm just asking that we think about where that money is going to come from and whether we can fund it at full amount or not. You know, we've committed here in the next 14 months to almost $1 million in increase in payroll. We've committed $4.7 million out of the 1% to, you know, fix the roads. We've got a couple more $1 million coming out of the general fund to pay for roof repairs. The clinic, you know, I think we've all agreed to support the clinic. It's possible that the CT may not generate as much income in the first year as they think it may. And maybe ask back for a bigger ask. Or we may not generate the same amount of funds in that tobacco tax to where we may be asking, well, are we going to pull money out of the general fund or some other place for it? We haven't seen, you know, we haven't finalized the budget or look, you know, gone through the budget in a deep dive yet. So we've still got some big decisions to make. And this is all part of the big financial picture. So my idea is not necessarily to say this is how it's going to be, but as far as the dollars, but for the council to think about what we're doing moving forward. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, with motion, the directive has been made to adjust the formula, basically, based on Councilman Luby's directive. Can you read that back, please, so that before we vote?
Yeah, actually, I just realized I didn't include the clinic in there in my directive. In the end, I left them out. So I don't know if I need to. I think I need to amend that because it's not my directive did not include the clinic to be able to come to that 1 point, you know, the 1,108,597. So if I could amend my directive to include the clinic to be funded through the tobacco tax at their requested ask, which I believe was 1,047,441. And that would come from the tobacco tax, what their request was.
And a motion to amend the directive. I'll need a second. Yes, go ahead.
Would it be helpful for the clerk to type the motion up on the board so everybody understands the original motion?
Well, yeah, that's why I want it read back, but coming back with the amendment didn't help.
But that did not have the clinic in there, so I need to include the clinic.
So I believe the original motion was for the first two lines and the fourth line. And then she's Councilmember Luby made a motion to amend to put in that third line. Do I have that right, Councilmember Luby?
Yes, that would be correct.
I don't have a second, do I? On the amended. Motion fails on the amendment to amend automatically, being no second. So we're back to 190, 50,000, and 1 million, 108. 108. Yeah, that's automatic. Yeah, that's good. Well, this, you're making comments, but it's be recognized so we can all hear it. Thank you. I guess my question at this point is, what does it do to our formula of 3.5? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I believe the original motion or for a directive from Councilmember Luby included those three amounts from those funding sources. That was seconded. And this won't change your formula at all. This is just saying that $190,265 will go to UVB from the bed tax, which is, if you, Madam Clerk, would you pull up page 2 from the memo again? Just scroll down. There you go. So you'll see the bed tax there, the amount is $190,265. That's where she got that number for the bed tax. And she got the $1,108,597 from that same chart for the 3.5% revenue average from the general fund.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions on the motion? The directive. Yeah, hearing none. I'll call for a roll call vote.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
No.
Mr. Bell?
No.
Mr. Nicholson?
No.
Roll call vote of 3 nays and 1 yes. The directive fails. Motion fails. Back to where we were.
Yeah.
Okay. We're back where we were, and I think that what we're doing here, we're going to be doing again, I'll say, on 23rd of April, where we do a deep dive into each total numbers of all of these entities, nonprofits that are requesting grants. And we'll have better numbers, I'm sure, on the tobacco and bed tax. It's going to increase. And we'll have a better number and suggestion from finance on what we can do. So I'd recommend that we do that on the 23rd. Also, possibly having all council members present would help also. Okay, hearing no further directives. Having completed all items on the agenda, we are adjourned at 7:25 p.m. Good night, Donalaska.